marvelous way in which he has lived his way into our academic and social life together. I shall not attempt to say anything more tonight on that particular subject, but rather to indicate that we did not want to let Professor Aebling return to Zurich without an opportunity for all of us to gather together and talk to him at the focal point of his own theological interests and in an area which is a particular theological concern to all of us. This has to do with the hermeneutical problem as it has appeared in theological discussion within the last few years. In this connection, probably all of you know that we held at Drew 2 years ago a consultation in hermeneutics and had as our guests Professors Aebling and Ernst Fuchs, as well as many other students of biblical theology of this country. As an outcome of that consultation and some discussions preceding it, a series of volumes has been projected, the first of which you have no doubt already seen, under the general title of New Frontiers in Theology. This first volume bears the title The Later Heidegger and Theology. A second volume is due before too long, entitled The New Hermeneutic, and in volume two, a number of the papers that were presented in the Drew consultation will be found. Then a third volume entitled Theology as History is projected to succeed that one. So we are addressing ourselves here to a problem that is in the course of being probed and which is unfolding. And we have projected for the spring of this year a second hermeneutics consultation to be held at Drew, in which we hope to focus the problem at a stage beyond that contemplated in volume three of this series. You'll be hearing more of that as the days come on. In preparation for that, we are scheduling a series of colloquium sessions together, which will be designed to prepare us for this consultation. These will be led partly by people from the outside and partly by members of our own faculty. But the aim is to put us in a position to respond more knowingly to the discussions of that consultation next April. So we thought tonight that we would simply meet and talk with our guest about these problems as he sees them. I hope you will bear in mind that Professor Aebling labors under some difficulties, as he feels, in responding in English to a discussion which is fairly technical at certain points, and where he feels the limitations of his English vocabulary make it difficult for him to express precisely what he has in mind. I have tried to assure him that we not only understand the situation, but we have been encouraged to feel that he is laboring under much less of a handicap than he feels. And especially at the point where a limited vocabulary sometimes permits one to be even more precise in defining a statement than when one has many words at his disposal. It's also very helpful to us to see how certain English words, which we use somewhat loosely, acquire a fresh significance in his syntax. So I say that on his behalf and also on ours. We thought we would move in a very flexible form tonight. I had asked Professor Michelson to suggest to some members of his classes that they might come prepared with some questions on the hermeneutic problem if they wish. But we would like to move quite flexibly, and You may use your own judgment as to the appropriateness of asking these questions at any time. Meanwhile, we thought we would begin by asking Professor Aebling if he would make a few introductory remarks describing the setting of the hermeneutical question as he sees it. In his own work, he has often referred to its Catholic and Reformation Protestant perspectives, also to the line of elaboration that runs from Schleiermacher through Dilthey into the work of Heidegger, both the earlier work and the later work. We know something of its Barthian and Bultmannian accents, and more particularly at the present time, the focus which it has achieved in the work of Heinrich Ott, and also in that of Ernst Fuchs and Professor Gerhard Aebling. He will no doubt speak from his own perspective, which is what we wish him to do. And when he has spoken a little bit to this setting and any other thing that he wants to introduce by way of introductory matter, then we'll be open to questions which we may address to him and talk with him about this problem. May I ask whether at the far end you would like Professor Aebling to stand as he talks, or would you can you see him if he remains seated? Mr. Ryan, how is it where you are?
I think the light is a good shot here. But
yes, you have.
It would be easier if you stood to see, however.
And how is it for Professor Harlan?
It would be easier to see, but I don't know if that's necessary.
Mr. Lingo?
We're
following here. All right.
I take your choice. Yeah, I stand. Mr. Dean, my colleagues and students, I am very strongly impressed by the fact that in your country, the students and the professors are very industrious in the whole semester, and together with each lecture course, there are special examinations, and so I have the feeling I must, in the end of my stay here, also pass a final examination. But I must remark that I already passed some very difficult examinations the last Monday. Today, a week ago, yes, I had to pass the examination in Harvard University, and Tuesday in Yale, and Wednesday in Union Theological Seminary. And I don't know how I can stand this examination here after all these efforts. And I think it's not very useful if I try to give a lecture about all these problems which are touched now in the brief summary of which Mr. Dean gave just now. It would be the best if you put your questions, if you know my attempts in concerning the hermeneutical problem rather well, and I think you have some questions about this. And I have a feeling if I now again try to develop my view of the hermeneutical problem in the Roman Catholic Church and in Protestant and Reformation view, and so it gets worse than in my writings. That is not very meaningful, and for me not very agreeable, and for you also not very helpful. Perhaps you are ready to ask some questions, and then we come into the discussion, and one word come to the other, and then we come in the discussion. I have the feeling that in my stay here are many gaps. I hoped I can here learn many things, and I am very disappointed that I spend the whole time, or the most of the time, for teaching. I had no so much opportunity as I wanted to come into the discussion with you and to learn about your questions and your problems and your view of the theological situation and so on. And therefore, I would be very glad if we can finish my stay here with such a discussion for which we had not the time in the whole semester. Now it would be necessary to begin and not to wait till we end this evening.
Mr. Archer, an introductory question. In what sense is hermeneutics disinterested? By that I mean, in what sense do I stand with the author and look at what he's looking at? And in what sense is hermeneutics involved or interested in a critical sort of way, in which I critically examine what the author has produced? It seems to me that there are two sides here, and that are either in harmony or in dialectic. But, I'd like to see you discuss.
Yes, shall I try to enter into the discussion? It's a complicated question, and I must try what you intend with your question. If I understood rightly, you ask about the importance of the question concerning the author and his intention. It seems to me that depends very much upon the determining question with which we read a text. We can read a text from very different viewpoints and with very different interest. Schleiermacher thought that the determinative interest for interpreting is discover what the author intended and to reproduce the production of the text. Yes, the interpretation is reverse of the creative process of writing a text. Yes. The main weight lay upon the recognition of the author and upon, as Schleiermacher called it, the psychological interpretation. But I don't think that it is sufficient or appropriate for the special theological task, and the specific question of theological interpretation. But I don't think that the question concerning the author is unimportant. I would enlarge this aspect to the statement that for understanding a text, the relation to the situation of the text is very important and decisive to discover and to take in account the situation of the text. And in this very large aspect, the viewpoint of the author is included. But you must push forward the discussion. I don't know whether I grasped your question rightly.
Yes, you got the first half, but the second half is the question, where do we now become critical, or in what sense does the hermeneutic allow us to take issue with what we have tried to understand?
In the sense as Schleiermacher and then Diltay formulated it that we must probably understand the author better than he understood himself, or that we come into a critical relation to the author, or understand that rightly?
Yes, but what, in order to come into this critical relationship, do we not have to have a question or a presupposition?
Mr. Michelson.
Oh no.
At is, it seems that in this attempt to get at the author's intention, we can do this without any background presuppositions, at least now, maybe. But my further question then is, if we want to be critical of this which we now understand, are we allowed now to bring presuppositions or questions into our hermeneutic in order to question the text or be critical of it?
Yes. Let me try to grasp this problem first from a little other approach. In understanding, always a critical moment is necessary. There is no understanding without critique. But the question is, what is that towards the critique is directed? And I think the direction of the critique is mainly directed toward my own belief and my own presupposition concerning the subject matter of the text. Or I could formulate it like this, not the subject matter of the text, but the tradition concerning the understanding of the text. This is the primary object of the critique. The historical critical method is developed in this sense, that our meaning about the text must be criticized. And the historical critical method is not in the true sense a critique against the text, but the opposite is right. It is a critique which originates from the text against the meaning about the text. But nevertheless, there can be also a critical movement against the subject matter of the text itself. For instance, there is a text which tells or reports a historical event, quite untheological instance now, yes? And in this text, the author reports falsely about this event, yes? The critical movement in the process of interpretation is directed against the text itself. But I suggest you to have much more in the background.
I'll wait for the time being.
Yes.
Professor Abel, I perhaps I have a more less technical question than Mr. Archer. First, let me say that I, for me, certainly one of the most exhilarating, even exciting, aspects of your visit has been the fact that you've been able to, you've even led us to draw together such names as Luther and Thomas and so on into the question of hermeneutics, and when I, for one, tend to think of it as belonging to such people as Heidegger and others in the contemporary scene who have concerned themselves largely with language. Now, in that line, as I think about the three lectures you've given, or the seminar in your two lecture series on Luther and Christology, I've been trying to cast my net to see if I could, in some way, see the thing as a whole, as I'm sure you do. And let me ask a question, a very broad and general question, designed to get at what I hope, or what I think, is your general thesis. Is it true that, as you said in one case, that in the original discussion of Christology, that the problem in the formulation of the Christological formula was to define the nature of man, and that God could be presupposed, and that later, especially after the historical critical period in theology, the problem then became the formulation of God and not of man, that theologians and historians and others could understand the historical man. That was no problem to them. But to see that that man also was divine was a problem. The Christological problem was reversed in the modern times. And if that's true, is it then your thesis that hermeneutics, as it is associated with Christology, should be designed to enable us to see how the human nature of Christ, or humanity, or the historical man, or history in the large, can also be the place where the divine, or God, can enter in. In other words, to make way in modern theology for an affirmation like the original Christological affirmation of Chalcedon. That's a very big question, but...
Yes, my congratulations. That is a question. That's a question. But I, poor boy, that I must answer this question. It's very difficult. But I am very thankful that you force to think these very different themes of my lecturing here together. And I think you find the crucial point. This in a double sense. Firstly, you began with a more outward aspect that you said it strikes you that I discussed the hermeneutical problem, but not with Heidegger and Fuchs and Bultmann and this realm of contemporary discussion, but I brought some of the Aquinas and Luther and the Orthodox Christology or such sources into the discussion. And let me say to this point a little remark. I think indeed that it is absolutely necessary if we want to come forward in the hermeneutical problem, and if we don't want to isolate the hermeneutical problem as a very special problem from the whole realm of theology, that we must become free from being concentrated only upon the contemporary discussion. I think that the church history is full of much better texts than our time can give us. And I have the feeling, perhaps I deceive myself, yes? Or ich täusche mich, what's... please correct me. I hope to learn here. But I have the feeling that I myself learned for the hermeneutical problem much more, for instance, from Luther than from Heidegger. And what I learned from Heidegger, it's only in the a Hilfslinie or support, yes, in the main discussion which is opened through the studying of the large theological tradition of the Christian Church. I would think that it's not only my private experience that I, but that I can give the advice for everyone that there is a danger in being captivated or into the contemporary discussion and not instead of being set free into the use of the whole richness of Christian theological tradition. Now the essential point that you combined very surprisingly the hermeneutical problem with the Christological problem. And I think this is also quite right. But it is perhaps necessary to explain your remark a little. You alluded to my lecture about Christology, where I stated the following change of situation in the development of the Christological problem in the traditional understanding of the Christological problem. There it was self-evident that God is, and that God is a Trinitarian God, and therefore there is a Son of God. This is a subject of Christology. And the special Christological theme begins with the statement that the Son of God became man, became flesh. And this is, in the traditional sense, the miracle, in the deep sense, of the Christological event, not the true God, but the true man, is that what is so difficult to understand. Therefore, in the traditional Christology is much more than the two gods, the two men in danger. Gnostic Christology is a typical danger for the traditional Christology, and also the Orthodox Christology is in danger against its own principle to weaken the true man. In the modern situation, it is so that if Jesus is a historical person, then of course he is a true man. The true man is there, no problem. The problem is how it is possible to state the true God concerning this man. But this must not be misunderstood in the sense that only one side is always problematic. Both aspects which are grasped together in the Christological dogma are belong together in such a way that if one side is missed, the other side is missed also. And it's not possible to state the true God to state it and remain it purely and to miss only the true man. If the true God is missed, then also the true man and vice versa. And therefore, in the modern situation, is not only the true God which must be clarified, whereas the true man is clear, but the struggle in the struggle between the Christian proclamation and the modern thinking is just because it is a struggle about God, a struggle about man. Do you understand this? And the whole struggle of the Christian proclamation in our time is, in the last analysis, a struggle about understanding of man. And the question is whether the sharp understanding of the true man as a consequence of the historical critical method and our historical thinking concerning Jesus helps us to understand the true God much sharper than in the Orthodox tradition. And from there, again, to understand the true man much deeper than this was the case in the Orthodox tradition. And here you see perhaps one intention in my work. In the so-called liberal theology, there it seemed to be possible to be a theologian or to be a Christian only by giving up some points of the traditional doctrine. And I think, and this is my intention, that our situation could enable us to grasp the essence of Christian faith deeper than the Orthodox tradition. And it's not so that we must ask, what can we remain festhalten? What can
hold
we
hold on to
from the Christian faith? But the main question, the matter of fact is that we are enabled to come deeper in the subject matter than it was the case in the Orthodox tradition of the Christian faith. And you help me to say it like this. The meaning of the hermeneutical effort in theology is not to adapt ourselves and the subject matter of theology to the modern age, but to just through the challenge from the modern age to open the Christian faith, yes, and, or the tradition about the Christian faith, so that it becomes powerful and clarifying in our situation. Yes, but perhaps you can help me to say it better.
Yes, perhaps. Indeed not. Thank you very much.
Professor Aveling, what is peculiar about our situation that would enable us to grasp the essence of the Christian faith better than, say, you said the Orthodox, or perhaps the liberal. What is our condition? And back to Mr. Archer's question, what do we bring to the text? If it's anything else than a listening ear, what is peculiar about our situation?
Yes, perhaps I could dare to say it like this. Our time prevents,
prevents
much stronger than the intellectual situation of the tradition in German I would say aufs Letzte zu gehen. How can you translate this in English? Completely other. Our contemporary situation makes it impossible. Yes, if we endure the problems of our time, to misunderstand the Christian faith as religion. And this religious interpretation of the gospel is made impossible if we stand this problem, yes, and the challenge of our times. The fact that being a witness of Jesus Christ in our time seems to be so terribly difficult. Just this is the promise that a deeper understanding occur. It seems to be paradoxical, but the connection between understanding a situation becomes important. I have the impression that on the one side, our lack of spiritual power, the fact that our sermons are so boring and that nothing happens, only speech, but now in a very bad sense, an empty speech. And that the church and all the works of the church is very busy, yes, but without real effect. And on the other side, that we are so burdened with by our task, and there are so many doubts and difficulties in theology and so on. I think that all this together has to do with the fact that we hesitate to put the step in this situation where the proclamation of Jesus Christ would be, because it is the most difficult but also the most hopeful situation. I think the impression here in the United States, which will be, for myself, the most important impression. It was my visit in East Harlem. There we can discover what is the situation where Jesus will be, and where the gospel will be through our witness and our service. And if we were free to go into such very critical and difficult situation of preaching. Preaching is now in a very broad sense. Yeah. If he were free to put the step in such elemental situation, then perhaps everything would be much clearer for us than it is really. Sometimes I, when I traveled here, I gave a lecture about the message of God to the age of atheism, and there I formulated it like this, that the message of God should have its most appropriate time in the age of atheism, because like bread is understood as bread in the situation where we in hunger, where we are in hunger, and bread is understood as bread only from those who are breadless, and help is understood as help only by those who are helpless. So God can become God only for the godless, and this is a hermeneutical situation for the gospel. Yes. And in this sense, I mean that because our situation is in difference to the so-called Christian age, so seemingly so desperate, just therefore it can be lead us to a more radical understanding of the gospel.
Perhaps you would elaborate just a bit on that. I take it that this that whatever we look for here in this kind of situation is not a return to religion and the religious in the sense of my thought. I think of the 19th century in some ways, where there was the religious as set apart and as assumed as the right way. And I take it that this situation will not have that character, but will be something quite different. That there will be an aspect where godlessness is protected, and not encouraged, that's not the word, but that we will not return to something before, but that we will, it'll have a unique character because of the nature of our time. I'd like to, maybe you could predict or say something about this. What form does this take? Does it take a non-religious form, or whatever? Maybe I could elaborate just a bit by saying that at one time when I read Tillich, and I was in undergraduate school, and I read something about we must be guardians of the void. We must protect the void.
Void?
The empty space.
Yes, the abyss. And he said we must guard it against those who would fill it up too quickly, and everyone coming forward to say, we must fill this, you know. And he said we must guard this.
Yes.
Well, this, I think now that I probably read that wrong, but that at the time that said something very meaningful. It spoke to, I thought, a true situation. And I didn't quite know how to articulate it and still don't. But this is something I'm getting at or asking for. This kind of, this sense of guarding a void, of protecting it against having it fill too quickly and being taken over.
Yes, sir. I think the theological problem of our generation is more and more concentrated upon what does it mean to use the word God. Not that this is in that this competes with a theology for which the Christology is a center. It's the same, but the Christological problem is grasped in its depth only if the question, what does it mean, God, is included in the Christological problem. And I think there is, it is necessary to go ahead also beyond Bultmann. Bultmann touched the question about the speaking about God in some essays very sharply, but if I understand rightly, he didn't combine his Christological, well, his speaking about the Christological problem, and especially about the concept of kerygma, with this radical problem about the understanding what the word God means. And what you said is that we have to endure the radical change situation, that the speaking about God has become radically questionable. And that we avoid to fill this too quickly with new metaphysical theories and so, but that we endure this being without God, without God as a self-evident God in its depth. But I must at once warn a little before the too self-evidential use of the Bonhoeffer formula, non-religious interpretation. I try to interpret this formula, but such formulas can help us to discover a certain aspect, but like all formulas, they have their time, and we must be very cautious that we don't make a dogma of them. And perhaps it is possible to regain even the concept of religion. I don't know, but it's not a question of single vocables, but it is decisive to grasp the subject matter itself. And therefore, my warning to repeat now without consideration and without an independent responsibility to repeat simply this formula about the non-religious interpretation.
Mr. Godsey.
I would be interested in knowing what you see as the main alternatives for hermeneutical interpretation and where you see the deepest cleavages. And I'm thinking, for instance, of the question, do you see the deepest cleavage between a hermeneutics of signification and a hermeneutics of word event, which might be the more Catholic Reformation tension? And if this represents the Catholic Protestant tendencies, are there different alternatives within Protestantism itself? Yes. Do I make myself yes. clear?
Yes, I understand your question, but I suppose that some others here don't understand, because it is a very brief summary of my remarks in the lecture. I will try to explain this very briefly. The understanding of language, which determined our intellectual tradition from the Greeks till now, is characterized by understanding of language as a signification of things. And on the one hand, there is the reality itself, the things, the subject matter. On the other hand, there is are the words as signs of things. This is a scheme in Plato's Catullus, which is decisive for the language philosophy of the whole European intellectual history. And this is also the scheme for the fundamental hermeneutical work of the Middle Ages, from Augustine, De Doctrina Christiana, the relationship between res and signum, and so. But this understanding of the function of language is not absolutely false, but is a very abstract understanding of language, because it is oriented primarily to the relationship between the single vocable and the thing signified by it. And this understanding of language according to the dictionary, it's a very abstract understanding of language, because the fundamental unity of language is the sentence spoken in a situation and in a certain spoken for man to man and in a certain time. Therefore, is for the right understanding of language the factor of the time decisive. That is what I mean in contrast to this dominant understanding of hermeneutics as hermeneutics of signification, the hermeneutics as of the word event. But please understand this this term word event as a tautology. Word as such, in its right understanding, is an occurring word, not the abstract word in the dictionary, but the concrete word as a spoken word, in the certain time spoken word. Yes, this I think word event. It's such a Zauberwort, what's it?
Magic word.
But please demythologize the term. A word event, it's a very simple thing. It's a tautology. Explained this difference in of these both hermeneutical approaches in the comparison or by the comparison of Thomas Aquinas and Luther quotations. And I think indeed that this is connected with the difference of the confessions, difference of the Catholic understanding of Christian faith on the one hand and the Reformation understanding on the other hand. For instance, the fact that the understanding of the word in the horizon of an hermeneutic of signification makes the word less important, and therefore it is meaningless for Catholic understanding to use the formula solo verbo, and vice versa in Reformation understanding. But it's in all aspects the same. The Protestantism is not the same as the real Reformation viewpoint of the gospel. And mostly Protestantism is varied modification of Catholicism. And therefore the hermeneutic of signification is also in very different ways dominant in the Protestant theology and Protestant understanding of the Word of God. And perhaps we could say the The it's so difficult to formulate in English. The difference how within the Protestantism the Reformation's 10 point is covered up by Catholic tendencies. It can be very different. Yes, this. Affects the difference within the Protestantism. You know the sentence of Tertullian that the anima naturalis Christiana, and this is right in the sense, the anima naturalis Catholica. The Protestantism is always in the danger to become Catholic in this sense of the natural theology.
Mr. De Grazia?
Two of the expressions I have heard you use most are the hermeneutical problem and the subject matter itself. And I understand neither, but the second one the least. And I'm not sure what you mean when you say the subject matter itself. It seems sometimes that you mean what revelation is. That what the subject matter itself is what it must tell you, and not what you dig out of it. At other times, it seems, in your own hermeneutical method, you seem to want to explore what is there, rather than let what is there tell you what is there. And I'm not sure what you mean then by the subject matter itself. At one time, it seems that you are doing what Bultmann would do in critical investigation. Another time, it almost seems as if Heidegger was speaking when you say the subject matter itself. Could you say something more about what that means?
I am embarrassed because yes, of two reasons. The first, the hermeneutical problem is a main word. Yes, I am very afraid, and I perhaps I return to Europe. With further proposal to avoid the word hermeneutic. it's sometimes necessary of course, it is very helpful movement to grasp almost, I had said, the subject matter itself. by means of a new term which includes a new kind of questioning, yes? And the hermeneutical question is a new approach to the subject matter of theology. the slant of this movement is to grasp always more and more of the content and of the task of theology with this, well, by means of this question, of this approach. And in the traditional sense, hermeneutics is a very special problem or special task. Only the rules of interpretation and the whole development from the at least Schleiermacher's hermeneutics till now is an enlargement of the hermeneutical problem. And it's not accidental that on the one hand for Heidegger at least in a certain phase of his thinking hermeneutics is identical with philosophy, and on the other side, on the other hand, hermeneutics becomes identical with theology. This is not false, but it is a dangerous movement because now this term becomes so large, so inclusive, that it loses its sharpness. And so it's the same in all other respects. Also, our use of the language is a permanent history, yes? And we use a word so long till it is misused, yes? And we need another word. And when one generation is using the term hermeneutics, it's necessary that the next generation comes and says, "What do you speak about hermeneutics? It's quite nonsense." Yes, and fine, that's a normal situation. This is a way of theology and all intellectual task, of course, yes. Therefore, it's necessary, let me formulate this as a hope or as a wish that we learn to understand what we mean when we use the term hermeneutics, and less use the term and much more come or use the subject matter itself. And now this other problem. It's impossible to answer the question, what is a subject matter? In subject matter, Sache in German, yes, it was a very difficult problem for me to find the appropriate translation for Sache, yes. But res in Latin, yes? It's the same thing as res in Latin. It's, this word is a very general and very empty word, yes? And it becomes it gets content, it gets relevance only in direction to a certain realm of reality. Yes. And when I use this wide and seemingly broad, empty term subject matter, I understand this as an imperative. Please go forward and don't be content with mere formulas. Yes. Go ahead to the reality of the things about which you speak in theology. Speak in theology, yes. And I think the meaning of concepts at all is not so much to define reality, yes, but to direct our thinking into a certain or to a certain goal, yes, and this every concept is an impulse, an imperative for our thinking. And in such a sense, probably, I use also very often, maybe too often, and I must also strike now this term, if it is if it gets weak and if it is misused. But in this sense, I use the term Sache as the impulse to lead our thinking to the decisive point. There you can also observe that I use very often the term reality, experience, and so. It's all the same, yes? The same intention. But what it is, that should discover it, yes, in the process of theological work, and you are challenged to go in this direction. But I don't know whether you understand my stuttering.
I'm not sure. It sounds almost like, is it Lessing who said, not the truth, but the search for it? I don't think you want to say that, and yet it sounds like that.
Not bad. it's an honor for me if you hear, or when you hear Lessing speaking through my mouth. this quotation includes some problems, but this is right, that we have the truth only in being on the way. This is not only Lessing, but this is already Luther. Yes? In these wonderful quotations I brought in one of the lectures published about letter and spirit. Yes, that what we have, that is already letter. And what is before us, what we are seeking or toward, we are directed as in the future. This is the spirit. And when we have it, then it is already again letter. Yes, and this movement between letter and spirit, this is the hermeneutical process, yes, in a very deep sense. Of course, when I said such word as subject matter and the calling to the subject matter is or is to be understood as an impulse for our theological thinking, then it is an expression for what is at stake in theology at all. Theology is not a doctrine which we can take over and then we have it. The theological study is only an introduction into becoming a theological student. And this is identical with being a theologian. Being a theologian is something which can be practiced only through the whole life. And it is never completed before our death. And therefore is the best help of theology that we are again and again disturbed and stirred, yes, to go forward, go ahead, and to not to be content with which we have, but go on the way. Yes. And what is the word for peitsche?
Whip.
Yes. Please use this term, subject matter, in my use, as a whip. Not to be content with your theology you have. But
part of hermeneutics mainly is trying to understand and interpret the biblical text. We had all of the methodology of the historical critical method. When we think of hermeneutics more as letting the text speak so that we are interpreted, so that our existence is questioned and clarified and illumined, what methodology do we have in that case?
Please, can you repeat the the last sentence.
When we think of hermeneutics,
yes,
as our existence being interpreted,
ah, yes,
how do we go about this? Or is it such a matter of spirit and so spontaneous that, there is no method?
Yes, the enlargement of the hermeneutical problem, which I mentioned just before already, namely the step from a very narrow understanding of hermeneutics as a summary of rules for interpreting a text and for overcoming difficulties in understanding a written transmitted text. Yes, this enlargement to task of understanding the reality itself and our being in within the reality. This step includes that hermeneutics is much more than this formal methodology. And together with this enlargement of the hermeneutical problem, the reduction to a formal methodological aspect is durchbrochen, broken through, and the seemingly methodological question becomes identical with the content of theology. This development is very interesting to observe in, for instance, in Barth's understanding of hermeneutics. And in this point, I agree, Barth, but with modifications which I now put aside. But for Barth asked the hermeneutical problem very sharply in the beginning of his theological work. The prefaces to his interpretation of the letter to the Romans are hermeneutical documents of a very high level and very interesting texts. And it could seem as if Barth abandoned in later time the hermeneutical problem and retired to a pure dogmatic method. But this is not quite right. He understood the hermeneutical problem as identical with, excuse me, I cannot help me, I must use, if I try to grasp the content of the theology, this terrible word, subject matter. And I think Barth also used this word very often. Therefore, his dogmatic is or could be understood as his hermeneutics. And a very abstract and theoretical aspect of our theological discussion today could be formulated as a problem whether the traditional distinction